I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Yesterday, the Vermont Department of Corrections announced that 85 Vermont prisoners serving their sentences at the Tallahatchie County Correctional Facility in Mississippi have tested positive for COVID-19. The state compelled the Mississippi prison, run by the private prison corporation CoreCivic, to test all the Vermont inmates after six of them tested positive upon returning to Vermont last week. The state says there are currently 219 Vermont prisoners in the Tallahatchie facility, which is in Duttweiler, Mississippi. That's about 40% of the Vermont population there testing positive in just these preliminary results. This comes as Mississippi is experiencing a surge in new cases. According to data from the New York Times, Mississippi is second in the nation for new cases per capita, behind only Florida. And Tallahatchie County, where the prison in question is located, is in the top 10 counties per capita in the country for COVID-19 rates. So what is the state of Vermont going to do about its burden of care for these Vermonters? Joining us with an update and a look forward is Interim Corrections Commissioner Jim Baker. Commissioner Baker, thank you very much for making time for us today.
Good afternoon, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So the six inmates who tested positive at Marble Valley Regional Correctional Facility in Vermont last week, as I understand it, they were coming back from Mississippi, which happens frequently before release. Was that the case for these six people, that they were coming back prior to being released?
That's correct. They're either coming back to start transition planning for reentry into the community, or they were coming back for programming purposes that would prepare them to be released into the community.
So none of these men were beyond their release date yet then? None of them should have been released by today or this week?
That's correct. They're in the process of various stages of moving towards release into the community.
Are you able to tell us the status of any of these six? Are they all doing okay?
Yeah, you know, to be careful about protecting privacy rights around medical, what I can say about the six are that all six of them, as they came back into our system here in Vermont, we followed our well-established protocols, which means they're quarantined upon entry into the facilities. We're tested at day zero, which is their entry point. One of the individuals was presenting some symptoms, but not multiple symptoms, and they would have been tested anyway. So as we talk right now, none of them are displaying any type of symptoms which are causing us concerns.
One Vermonter who remained in Mississippi last week had also been announced as a positive case, and this was prior to the testing of all of the Vermont inmates in Mississippi. What are the circumstances under which that person was tested? Because as I understand it, the six who came back to Vermont were tested in Vermont under Vermont protocol. Why was that gentleman in Mississippi tested?
CoreCivic follows the Mississippi guidelines, which is testing if someone presents with symptoms. So that individual presented with symptoms, and they tested as part of that protocol in Mississippi. That, Jane, combined with within a couple days, the six inmates coming back positive caused us great concern, and we immediately made contact with CoreCivic to start the process of testing all of the inmates at the facilities.
The Vermont inmates?
Correct, all 219.
Were there any issues getting CoreCivic to test all of the Vermont inmates over the last couple of days?
There were several issues. We started this conversation last week, I believe on Thursday. Because they're a private entity, they did not have a relationship with the Mississippi Department of Health. Our Department of Health here, under the leadership of Dr. Levine, provided a contact there so we could get that conversation going. They had limited access to collection kits, so we had to work on that with them. Eventually, what happened is they started collecting samples, sent it off to their private lab, which is in Texas, and we were able to get the Mississippi Department of Health to agree to test at their state lab in Jackson, Mississippi. So all the samples were taken, and ironically, the samples that we have back that are positive came out of the state lab, even though they were 24 hours or so behind collecting the original samples and went to the private lab.
So it sounds like these 85 men who have tested positive so far, that's not out of a total of 219 tests that have come back. How many tests have been actually processed?
All the tests have been processed, sent away to a lab. Again, we're talking about collecting.
Right.
You know, the collection of the sample is
has been done. Yeah.
Correct. It's a, you know, the other part of that is the testing at the lab. So we're waiting for the private lab in Texas to get back with the samples that were collected and sent to that lab.
How many of the 219 were sent there?
You know, the math is not going to add up here because we did have some refusals. So I believe it was somewhere around 86 or so that we're waiting for. You know, again, don't hold me to that because there still were some refusals of folks that would not submit to a test.
I see. So when we say 85 people have tested positive, it's not 85 out of 219 because we don't have all of the results back. So it is significantly higher than 40%, perhaps.
Yeah, as the commissioner, I'm very concerned about the situation in Mississippi. I'm very concerned that those numbers are going to rise. And our focus right now is on the absolute best medical care that we can get to the individuals there.
Yeah, because we – yeah, go ahead.
I must say, Jane, that the 85 folks that have tested, we have our medical staff dialed in directly with the medical team on the ground there. None of them are presenting symptoms that are concerning to us right now. But that that does not mean we know from the virus and our experience here in Vermont that those circumstances can change rapidly. And that's why we have set up a system where our medical provider staff here are in direct contact with the medical staff there.
Wow. So given what we know so far, we could be looking at the majority of Vermonters who are serving time in Tallahatchie having an active case right now.
You know, if you do the math, and I think the other important point here is, and you mentioned it in your lead-in, Mississippi is second in the country right now for community spread. Why are the jails in Vermont in such good shape? I'd like to say, you know, hooray to the Department of Corrections, and I do want to call out the staff for all the hard work, but it's the collective work that's been done in Vermont. You know, under the leadership of the governor, we test the suppressor, and a lot of other states are not doing that. So community spread plays a big role in how a facility such as a jail gets affected. Nursing homes and other long-term care facilities get affected because of community spread. It's brought into the facilities. And, you know, that's what we believe happened here in Mississippi.
Is that facility in lockdown now? What is happening in that facility to try to protect anyone who does not have COVID-19?
So we have negative tests, and the negative tests have been separated out, and there are 32 negative tests, and they are currently separated out from the rest of the population. The positive tests are in medical isolation. The other folks that we're waiting for are locked down. We're working with them. We developed with the Vermont Department of Health here in Vermont an incredible system of contact tracing. And we're assisting them there today with that contact tracing so we can get a better idea of how to cohort folks that may not have tests back, or even the folks that are negative at this point, what the contact was, because that provides us an insight into the future of what they could go from being negative to positive. So we're doing that contact tracing now and providing the expertise that we've developed here in Vermont. We're sharing that with them right now. We have a staff member dedicated to them, working with them right now to do that contact tracing.
How many people are incarcerated in the Tallahatchie Correctional Facility in total, not just Vermonters?
I don't know that because, you know, I've never been there, but as it's been explained to me countless times, we have our own wing or wherever the terminology there at Tallahatchie is. So I don't know what the rest of the population on the grounds are. But our inmate population does not have interaction with the rest of that population.
So it is possible to quarantine the Vermont prison population in one area.
That's correct.
Do you have a sense, though, if the other prisoners in this facility are being tested, given what we're seeing in the Vermont population?
I don't have the answer to that because I've been so focused on, with CoreCivic, making sure that the medical pieces are in place to protect our population. As I've stated to my staff, and I stated pretty clearly to CoreCivic over the weekend, that the people that are there from Vermont are Vermonters. We have a moral and statutory obligation to make sure that we're delivering the best health care we can. And my focus right now is on making sure that happens.
Are staff members who interact with Vermonters moving from unit to unit, or are they also isolated within the Vermont sort of bubble?
The norm is that they would be in the Vermont bubble. But I want to bring out what's the obvious, which I'm sure will be a question of yours, Jane, is that what about staff?
Right.
And I'll say this again. Vermont's jails are as clean as they have been. We had the one situation in Northwest that we learned valuable lessons from. We stopped the spread dead in its tracks as a result of the work that we did with Dr. Levine and his staff at the Vermont Department of Health. And your jail system is only going to be as good as the community spread on the outside. And in this case, I'm concerned about the staff that works at the jail coming from the outside. You know, if you look at the numbers of, you know, you've mentioned that that county's 10th in the country in community spread. And so we pushed pretty hard on CoreCivic over the weekend to test their staff, and they started testing the staff because there's no sense in trying to isolate this if the source of the spread is coming from the staff from the outside into the facility.
Can you explain the refusals you mentioned earlier? That so not everybody has agreed to be tested in the Vermont population, and is that that's acceptable? They're allowed to not get tested.
We've experienced that. Excuse me. We have experienced that here in Vermont. Mm-hmm. You know, as folks know, we have an ongoing process to test a facility a week. So every 6 weeks, one of our six facilities are going to be tested. And by the way, that will now become the rotation for the Mississippi facility as well. We have run into this. This is not unusual for folks to refuse the testing for a whole host of reasons. Sometimes, you know, we're testing a lot, and it's not pleasant to be tested. And sometimes the inmate population will refuse. Our practice then is to treat it as a medical isolation because we can't take the risk that they're positive and we're not aware of it. So we will use medical isolation in order to deal with that. And we have asked Mississippi CoreCivic to do the same thing to be able to cut down on the risk of any further spread.
So the prison population in Vermont, as you, of course, know, Commissioner Baker, has declined by about 300 since the start of the pandemic. And in a V.T. Digger piece that came out prior to the knowledge of this outbreak in the prison in Mississippi, Al Cormier, facility executive for the Vermont Department of Corrections, said that in theory, if COVID-19 wasn't creating a need for more spacing in Vermont facilities, all of the Mississippi prisoners could be returned to the state. He's quoted as saying, without COVID, could we? Yes, we probably could. And goes on to say, it wouldn't be the best possible circumstances, but we could. So although Vermont facilities aren't at the same security level necessarily as the prison in Mississippi, it sounds like it would be technically feasible to bring these prisoners back to Vermont. Vermont is currently in the process of negotiating a one-year extension of the contract with CoreCivic, which runs this prison in Mississippi. Is there a possibility, Commissioner Baker, that you can stop negotiations and bring these men back to serve their sentences in Vermont, given the health concerns, the significant health concerns?
I think it would be a big challenge. I think what Executive Cormier was saying is that if you took COVID-19 off the table, we could do that. It would be challenging to do it simply because of some of the challenges we have in our facilities. For example, our mental health population and how we have to manage those inside our facilities. But with COVID-19, it's very difficult. Now, with all that said, right now, as the commissioner, I'm focused on, as I said a couple of times in the interview, Jane, I am very focused. My entire focus is on making sure that we've got the medical support to include, by the way, we've done a survey of the hospitals in the area for capacity surge, to better understand what they have for ICU beds and respirators and the kind of things that if someone starts developing a drop in O2 saturation, that we when do we move them? What's the plan to move them? What's the ambulance service, so on? What's the closest trauma hospital? We're doing all that work right now. We're focused on that right now. But there's going to have to be a conversation with CoreCivic about these circumstances moving forward as it pertains to our contract. Can we bring people back right now and close out that contract? I think that that is not possible. But I do think that we have to be thinking about, as the, especially as we start talking about the consequences of the impact of budget as a result of COVID-19, this is all in our radar screen. But right now, I haven't had much time to think about that or discuss that with Secretary Smith. Our focus right now is making sure the absolute best medical care is in place by these folks that have been victimized by the virus.
Yeah, let me ask you one final question about that then, Commissioner Baker. I mean, these are Vermonters in the care and custody of the state of Vermont, even if they're serving sentences in Mississippi. And the state has a burden of care for these people to make sure that they can stay healthy and alive. So how will you meet that burden of care in the short and in the long term?
So as I said, the staff that I have that are in the medical team are in direct conversation. We have a part-time medical director, Dr. Scott Stremio, who's been very much involved in these conversations over the last 2 to 3 days. And we are in the process of having a conversation with a medical firm that would put medical monitors on the ground in Mississippi as eyes and ears for us. One of the things that's been challenging for us with the Mississippi population is because of COVID-19, we haven't had the presence at the facility that we normally had prior to COVID-19. And I'm feeling like we need at least one set of eyes, if not two set of eyes, on exactly what's happening for medical care down there. And I also want to say, Jane, to families that are out there that have loved ones at that facility, I understand my personal responsibility here as the Commissioner of Corrections to their loved ones. And I'm not taking that lightly. And we've set up additional staff to handle any questions that family members have by going to our website. They can click on the family and friends link that's on our website, and they can leave a message. And we bolster staff that manages that now to have direct contact so we can get back to family as quickly as possible so they know what's going on with their loved ones.
Commissioner Baker, I imagine that this is keeping you up at night. Are you confident that the men in Mississippi are being cared for as well as they possibly could be right now?
I feel a lot better now than I did a week ago, Jane. I was directly involved in the conversations with CoreCivic over the weekend, and I think they are pretty clear in understanding where I am as the commissioner about what my expectations are about those folks that we have a statutory and moral obligation take care of.
Jim Baker is the interim commissioner of the Vermont Department of Corrections. I really appreciate you making time for us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane.
We will also put some information up on our website today for how you can reach out to the Department of Corrections if you have a loved one that you're concerned about and want more information. We turn now to Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan for the latest on the state's response to COVID-19 and updates to health guidance, mask usage, etc. Commissioner Dolan, thanks as always for making time for us.
Thank you. It's good to be here again.
So we were just talking with Interim Corrections Commissioner Jim Baker about the outbreak, COVID-19 outbreak. And I think it's probably safe to call it an outbreak given what we now know about the number of Vermont inmates testing positive for COVID-19. 85 from the preliminary results were positive. There are 219 prisoners total in that facility that are Vermonters, but we're still awaiting perhaps something like 80, close to 100 tests to come back. So it sounds like it could be a massive outbreak in that prison if that's just what the Vermonters are experiencing.
Yeah, and I first want to echo Commissioner Baker's concern and his words to Vermonters, especially those families who have people in that prison in Mississippi. I know people are very concerned. We are also very, very concerned, and we're doing everything we can on the public health end as folks have come back now to make sure that they are in quarantine, they're isolated. We have limited their contact in order to stop the spread here. And we are testing close contacts. So we feel like we have a handle on it here. But again, certainly recognize there's a lot of concern for those who are still there. It does sound like a significant outbreak in that institution.
When you look at what's happening in Mississippi, as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview with Commissioner Baker, Mississippi is second behind only Florida in the 7-day rolling average of new cases per capita. And Tallahatchie County is one of the top 10 counties in the entire country for per capita new cases. When you try to compare the two states, what do you think the differences are, obviously beyond population, in why Vermont is doing so much better than Mississippi?
You know, the first thing I think when I see and hear those numbers is that we cannot be complacent. This virus has not become less virulent, and it doesn't transmit less easily than it did a few months ago. We've put a lot of things in place to bring those numbers down in Vermont, but it tells me we really have to continue to be vigilant. It doesn't take much easing off to see it spread. We have great numbers right now. We have low incidence. We have a lot of compliance across Vermont. We shut down schools relatively early in terms of the number of cases we had. We got on top of long-term care facilities quickly. We got into Department of Corrections very quickly. In fact, CDC came and documented our approach and used it as a best practice across the nation early on. So there are a lot of things we did quickly. We quickly ramped up our contact tracing efforts. We have a governor who's been listening to the science throughout. I'm really pleased to see the mandate now as well. And a lot of Vermonters are paying attention. They recognize that we have good numbers here, but they are continuing to distance, continuing to wear masks. Still, you know, just the other day, one of our staff who normally comes in because of her work was not feeling well. And there was no question, you know, stay home. So the idea that you stay home no matter what your illness is still there as well. And then, of course, really ramping up the testing capacity. We are seeing that when we test large groups of people who do not show symptoms, we're seeing very low numbers coming back in terms of positives. So we've done a lot. And of course, some of it is our rural nature. We are more spread out and that helps us. But it also really makes me cautious and optimistic, but cautious that we really need to continue what we're doing.
In preparation for the interview that I just conducted, I was reading the Biloxi Sun-Herald this morning, a newspaper in Mississippi, and they were saying that testing is actually down in Mississippi, which, you know, so as opposed to Vermont, where we've tried to increase testing capacity and sometimes have struggled to get enough people to do the testing, it sounds like that's not the case in every other state, as you just mentioned, Deputy Commissioner.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that this links to is this is not a standalone issue. So COVID-19 and this pandemic is new, but the way states are able to respond, the way healthcare is able to respond, also reflects the state of healthcare and access to healthcare in those states. Mississippi, unfortunately, regularly ranks as one of the poorest states in terms of health status, access to healthcare. And so it's not surprising when we see states that have low rankings in health status also have challenges in this area. These are things connected, just like when we talk about people of color and the outsized impact of this virus on them. Again, that's not new. That brings us back to determinants of health, health status, social justice. All these things are connected. And I think this pandemic continues to outline and shine a light on where we already had disparities in terms of access, in terms of states, et cetera.
We got a note from Chris who writes in to say, I came up from Grenada a few weeks ago. In that small island, they had two facilities for taking and analyzing the results of the PCR test, one private, one public. Both gave results in 24 hours. When I came here to Vermont, I quarantined and took the PCR test, and it took over a week to get the result. My doctor told me they send them to Maine to get the results and that there was a huge backlog of cases. Does Vermont analyze tests as well as taking them? And if not, what is the barrier to that?
Sure. So we do take and analyze our own tests. UVM has a laboratory and the Department of Health has a public health laboratory that's sizable. There are also some other small laboratories in hospitals in Vermont. However, the capacity of our labs here isn't high enough to be able to process all the tests. So what we are doing is prioritizing the tests of those who may be at most at risk or involved in an outbreak. And those are the ones that we're testing most likely in our labs here. For those who are in a lower priority in terms of the risk, obviously not lower priority in terms of human beings, we send those to labs that unfortunately in the last month or so have slowed down because the demand has increased all over the country. So our demand hasn't increased significantly, but those labs are not just dealing with us. Those labs are dealing with huge states where we've seen surges. And so all of that pressure has slowed down results significantly.
What's the solution to that? Because, you know, for example, if you go to a hot spot, or in some cases, people have gone to a county out of state that they thought was not a hot spot, but it became a hot spot while they were there. And now they have to come home and unexpectedly quarantine when they return to Vermont. You're allowed to get a test after the first 7 days of your quarantine if you're coming in from a place that has had higher levels than we accept here in Vermont. But if then you can't either find a testing site that will take you or get the results for another 7 days, what even is the value of having that early testing? Should everybody just assume they're going to be quarantining for 14 days no matter what?
I mean, it's very difficult, and I understand the challenge. And right now, I would say that a lot of people are probably assuming 14 days now that you're hearing about slow turnaround times, especially if you're coming back and that's the only reason you're getting a test. Now, if you're showing symptoms or you're sick, that changes things, and it's likely that your test will move much more quickly because we want to get that positive if it is very quickly in order to contain and do the contact tracing. And we're doing everything we can. We're reaching out to every lab that we can think of. We are talking to other states. We're talking to pharmacies. Pharmacies also have contracts with some big labs, including some that they run themselves. And so we're trying to increase the number of pharmacies who might work with us and other partners, also hospitals. But we're all a little bit in the same boat. And labs are doing everything they can to increase capacity. Some of them have moved to a method called pooled testing, where you can test in a pool and get results back in a group rather than one by one. So we're looking into that. So there are things that we're looking into in order to increase the turnaround time and the capacity. But I understand people's frustrations. We're frustrated too, and this is a pretty big limiting factor right now.
The governor's mask mandate went into effect on August 1st, which was Saturday. We have some questions about that coming in. And listeners, if you'd like to add your question, you can email vermontedition@vpr.org, or you can call 800-639-2211. Alex is calling in from Fairfield. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. Go right ahead.
Well, my question is, I was curious, are stores required to post that there is a mandate to wear masks? Because I have a store that I frequent, and they have not had anything showing that there's a mandate since the mandate began. And I was there today, and there's lots of people with no masks.
Alex, does the store say have any signage about masks at all on the outside of it when you walk in?
No, none at all. Only signs that say that we're supposed to be 6 feet apart.
Okay. So Deputy Commissioner Dolan, my understanding was stores, that was part of the wait till August 1st, was to give retail establishments time to create signage and to make sure that it's up there.
Yeah, I believe that stores should have signage up. I don't know if the signage has to say there's a mandate or if the sign has to say that you have to wear a mask in my store. I don't know if you have to refer to the mandate, but stores should have signs up. I'd have to open up the executive order to see the language on that. And certainly people should be wearing masks. That is the mandate. You should certainly be wearing it inside in a store. And we are hearing that here and there. Again, everywhere I go, and I might just be lucky, I'm seeing the signs and I'm seeing literally everyone wear a mask. But I am hearing that there are pockets where there aren't. And that is an incredible risk because we know what's happening all around us outside of Vermont.
So if somebody like Alex wants to maybe alert someone but doesn't necessarily want to be in conflict with this retail establishment, is there, you know, what advice do you have for people who want to report something or want to make a change to protect their health and the health of others?
I believe there's still a reporting option on the ACCD website. The ACCD website is the one that's regulating this kind of work. And as far as I know, there are instructions on the ACCD website as to what you do next. But I will pull it up as we speak today and see if I can get a little more information on that.
And Alex, I am reading actually the governor's executive order right now, which says, and I quote, businesses and nonprofit and government entities shall implement measures notifying customers or clients of the requirement to wear masks or facial coverings, which may include but shall not be limited to posting signage stating that masks or cloth facial coverings are required, and denial of entry or service to customers or clients who decline to wear masks or facial coverings. So that is what the executive order says on that. Thank you for your question, Alex, and good luck. Daniel is calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Daniel. What's on your mind today?
Yes, good morning. This is Dan from Middlebury, and I was reading 7 Days, the July 29th issue, page 12 under health, shows a picture of Governor Scott and lays out some of the executive order. But there's one part that says, quote unquote, strenuous exercise after it talks about people with asthma and such. So those that are engaged in strenuous exercise, I'm assuming this might be in health clubs. And my concern, I spoke with one of the owners of one of the local martial arts schools. We run camps. I've been involved in that school for over 20 years myself, and we just recently had some camps, and everybody was required to wear the mask. We've been following the protocols, but on a personal level, just concerned, what is the strenuous exercise? It seems like it's really open-ended so that people in all these different clubs can just not wear masks at all because we're all under strenuous exercise. So that's just a concern.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for that. Trace Dolan, we talked about this the last time we had you on as well, and there are others who have questions too about why the exemption for strenuous exercise, especially why make an exemption for strenuous exercise if it's indoors where there is a presumed higher rate of transmission?
Yeah, our preference is that you wear a mask when you're exercising, particularly indoors. That's the general recommendation. There is an exemption for those who may not be able to do that. But in general, the expectation is you should wear a mask whenever you can when you are indoors, even if you're exercising. The exemption simply means if there's a reason you can't, maybe it's difficult to breathe because of some condition you may have, and in that combination with the exercise. But generally, our recommendation is, again, that's an exemption. It doesn't mean you shouldn't wear a mask. It means if you can't, don't wear a mask. But I understand that that is a cause for concern. And we are also concerned about people congregating indoors, exercising and not wearing masks. So generally, our expectation is that most people are. And there may be times when you can't.
So is the exemption for strenuous exercise mainly an economic one? Because it sounds like from what we know about people breathing more heavily, there could be a higher rate of transmission or the possibility for people breathing out strenuously, breathing out more droplets and breathing them farther. And if they're inside, especially if there's poor ventilation, that's a significant concern. So is it an economic exemption to allow health and fitness clubs to try to survive? I mean, is that sort of the crux of why that's there?
You know, I really can't speak to the motivation, and I didn't think of it that way. I presume that there may be a few people who are unable to exercise with the use of a mask. But again, I can't speak to the specific motivations.
Wouldn't they be covered by the health exemption if you have a breathing difficulty?
You could. It might be a combination where normally you can wear a mask even if you have asthma, but maybe when you exercise, you can't. Again, I can't speak to probably every instance where this might fit, but it's an exemption. And again, our general recommendation is everyone, when you're inside near anyone, wear a mask. But yes, there are a few exemptions. And I know that one in particular has been questionable for some people.
I mentioned Operation Cloth Face Coverings for Everyone, and this is a statewide distribution and mask acquirement program to try to make sure that all Vermonters are able to comply with the mask mandate and protect themselves and one another's. The state's mask distribution program is going to offer towns enough masks to cover 25% of their population, and it's going to be up to local communities to figure out how to distribute the cloth facial coverings. The National Guard will also hand out masks at food distribution sites around the state, and the Health Department is going to have masks at pop-up coronavirus testing locations. Deputy Commissioner Dolan, is there a sense that not all Vermonters still have access to a mask or more than one mask, given that, you know, we're supposed to wash our masks frequently?
Yeah, no, I think absolutely there are probably some Vermonters who don't have access to masks or specifically more than one mask. I mean, we're not, some of it might be about economics. Some of this is about behavior change. For people who are still possibly hesitant to wear masks, having one is just one more barrier that we're removing. So if you're thinking, oh, well, I don't have one in my car today, so I can't wear one today. Well, this is one more opportunity to have another one or two, place them in each place, you know, keep one at home, keep one in your car, keep one on your person. And this is just one more way to make it easier. We want to make it as easy as possible. That's a public health mantra. Make the healthiest choice the easiest choice.
Are there going to be child-sized cloth face coverings as well? Because getting now the mandate applies to anybody over the age of 2, and it can be harder to find facial coverings for children.
That's a great question. I have not heard in the discussions that those would include child size, but I could be wrong. But that's something I can bring forward and double check. I think people have prioritized masks for their children, maybe even more than masks for themselves, but it's something important to think about. Thanks.
Let's talk a little bit about older children. Not so much children, I suppose. When you're 18, that's the last thing you want to be called. But college students who are sort of in that cusp, many of the younger college students between childhood and adulthood. All of the colleges in Vermont are required to do testing for new arrivals, but many of them are going to be doing COVID-19 testing throughout the semester. UVM is among the ones who are planning to test students regularly. In fact, students are going to be tested every week at UVM, and UVM sent out more information about this a couple days ago. They'll be administering the tests themselves. The tests will be processed, that is, the students will be, and the tests will be processed by labs independent of the ones the state is using. Can we talk a little bit about these tests that UVM and perhaps other schools are planning to use? They are PCR tests, not antigen tests, and we've talked in previous shows about the difference between those two tests.
Yes.
But they're also not the same as what you get at the hospital or a pop-up site, that nasopharyngeal swab that feels like it's swabbing your brain. It's not the same as what the students will be doing themselves. So what's the difference, and are these tests as good?
So UVM initially will be asking students to test before they arrive at campus, either 3 to 5 days beforehand, and that will be a test through the company called Vault, and it's a spit test. Is that the test that you're referring to right now?
Yes. I mean, UVM has said frequently, it's not the brain tickling test, but it is a PCR test. So, you know,
yes.
What's the difference not in?
So I can speak to the Vault. I can speak to the Vault test. I don't know if they're going to utilize different tests moving forward, but I can speak to the Vault test. And so we actually heard from Vault on this particular methodology a couple of months ago, wanting to know how they might be able to report results back to us. So they would need to report batch results. And so when labs or companies start to realize they're going to do business in Vermont, they reach out to us to make sure we can record their results. And so we looked into it then, because of course, sometimes you get messages from companies and you find out they're not approved. So this is an FDA approved test. It is a PCR test, which means it gives you results about this point in time. And I checked in with our lab this morning to see if we would be able to accept the results. And what we need to look into now is we need to check in with a couple of the national lab organizations to check on the methodology and to confirm that the methodology would be the same as is being used by Vault. So there's probably a methodology standard, and we would have to compare that. If it were, then we could accept a positive test, if there was a positive test, and we could simply accept it and not need to confirm it. But there may be a requirement that even with this test, we would have to confirm it with another PCR here. So that's where we're not sure yet, and we'll find out if we would need to confirm it with a PCR test on our end. We anticipate that most Vermont students who take this are likely to come back negative because, again, asymptomatic Vermonters are very unlikely to be getting tested positive. Right now, we're just seeing very low numbers. But because we have out of state, you know, we could have some higher numbers there. So we're looking into that now to make sure that we've got our processes in place in case we need to do confirmation testing.
And just to be clear, as you were mentioning, Deputy Commissioner, that this test is through Vault. It's a spit test. It's not necessarily the same one that will be ongoing throughout the semester. I'm reading the UVM press release now that says on-campus testing throughout the semester will be accomplished as part of an agreement UVM is finalizing with the Broad Institute, a collaboration of physicians, biomedical researchers, et cetera, from MIT, Harvard, and Harvard-affiliated hospitals. Broad will supply the test kits. The university will conduct the testing and ship the samples to Broad for analysis, who will then turn them around and try to have them back within 24 hours. So perhaps slightly different testing, but do you expect then that these spit tests, these less invasive and more able to be done by individuals kind of testing will become protocol for other Vermonters who want or need to get tested in the future?
I mean, that's certainly the direction we'd like to go. It really helps with, first of all, administering the test. The nasopharyngeal test is a little bit uncomfortable. For some people more than others, but it's a little uncomfortable. It does require, because of the nature of the test, more personal protective equipment because it is more invasive. So anything that allows us to use the shorter nasal swabs, the ones that look more like a Q-tip, that's helpful. Or a spit test, all of those provide a little more protection. Or ones that allow the person to do it themselves also cuts down on staff time and increases convenience. So all of that helps. I mean, our key is, of course, to just make sure that the tests are done with the highest quality so that we can ensure that they're as accurate as possible.
I have more questions for you about that, but I'll ask them the next time we have you on because I want to make sure that we get a couple more listeners in here as well. Jessica is calling in from Lindenville. Hi, Jessica. Go right ahead.
Hi. First of all, I want to congratulate Deputy Commissioner Dolan. I think the Vermont Health Department is doing a great job, and she sounds very committed and focused and articulate. So thank you.
Thank you. And I would have to say thanks also to all the staff at the Department of Health. They put in long hours, so thank you.
My question is, I have a person who went to the hospital yesterday that I know, and the person was symptomatic, and he was told that they wouldn't be able to return the results for more than 7 days. And I thought I heard you saying that people who were symptomatic would get the test done in Vermont, which would be faster than 7 days.
What about a deputy commissioner?
Sure. Again, I can't speak to what happened at that hospital, but generally when somebody is coming in and they're symptomatic for COVID, I mean, you know, somebody could have symptoms for something else and a physician may not suspect it's COVID, but if they suspect it's COVID, generally, those results are turning around faster. So when they send them to their labs, they send them with a priority stamp, or they may send them over to our lab, depending on how high a priority it is. So I can't speak to what happened there. Ideally, those tests are getting turned around faster. Certainly in our experience, when we've worked on an outbreak, we've been able to turn them around very quickly because of the nature and the urgency of the situation. So I can't speak to it there, but generally, we've seen them turn around faster when we've needed them to in that way.
And let's hear from Bill, who's on the line with us from Richmond. Go ahead, Bill.
First of all, thank you for all the work you folks have done, because you've done a great job keeping Vermont safe, and that's greatly appreciated. So anything I say is not in light of that. With the federal government acting, well, irresponsibly throughout all this, let's be blunt, with colleges coming back in, families coming back in from whatever summer they've done, I've heard the school plan. I have two school-age kids. I'm curious to know whether or not you feel confident we're not going to get an outbreak in the public school system of our different communities, because even the new legislation that came in with masks on has no teeth to the legislation. People are not going to be arrested on site or anything like that. So how do we really protect that? Are you confident that we are not going to have outbreaks, and what makes you so confident?
Tracy Dolan.
Sure. No, I'm not confident that we're not going to have any outbreaks in K-12, but I also have two school-aged children, and I do feel confident sending them back. It's possible that we may have a few outbreaks with those numbers, you know, with the numbers of kids going back. What I am confident about is if there is a positive case, that we are likely going to be able to contain that very quickly. that our public health team is going to be able to spring into action, that we have very strong partnerships with the schools. It's possible that we won't have any, but we may have some small outbreaks. And I am confident that we'll be able to get a handle on it quickly. So that's what I feel confident about. Again, the children in Vermont right now, from what we know, and the adults who are asymptomatic have a very, very low test positive rate. And it's true that people are traveling, although I feel like people with children are being extra careful about where they're traveling and coming back with quarantine. So I am hoping that we've got the healthiest population we can arriving at school in September and that we are on top of it. And again, of course, if things change in our state, we will change course as well. And we will pull back if we need to. But I am hopeful with my kids also going back that we're able to do this successfully. And I know our team is ready in case there are some small outbreaks.
Allison Novak posted in 7 days last week that new guidance from the state could come this week, changing the guidance for schools from a requirement for kids and teachers to have 6 feet of distance to one that only requires 3 feet of distancing. Can you clarify if that guidance is likely to emerge?
The guidance is coming this week, and it will likely say 3 to 6 feet for the younger kids based on what we know about the younger kids, based on what we know about transmission, and based on the need for kids to be in school. And so I think that all those conditions together, and again, with our low incidence rate, things could change if that changed. But without the surge that we thought might happen, we will likely push that to 3 to 6 feet. It's also consistent with WHO and some other international public health bodies.
And some states which have made that as well. But will that enable most Vermont elementary schools to open up for in-person instruction 5 days a week?
It could, but I can't speak to whether or not they will. I think that's still in their ballpark.
Tracy Dolan is Deputy Commissioner of the Vermont Department of Health. Tracy, as always, we really appreciate that you reserved time for us. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all the questions.